Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. We're 2 days removed from the Labor Day weekend. It is Wednesday, September 7th, 2016. I'm reporting live from the Woodlands, Texas, outside of Houston, and my co-host, Stan Friedman, is in Hotlanta right now.
Hotlanta. It is hot in Atlanta today. It's still up in the 90s, Paul. Still have that summertime. I guess the calendar here hasn't figured out yet that we're supposed to be approaching fall.
Yeah, probably not. But, you know, speaking about hot, I mean, when you think about hot and you think about food, you can't help but think about hot wings. And I know this past weekend you were at a certain event, and I'd love for you to share what transpired this past weekend.
So, Paul, as many know already, that in addition to the several other hats that I wear in IFA and around franchising, for the past 7 or 8 years or 10 years now, I've been the chairman of the National Buffalo Wing Hall of Flame. Now, most don't even know that exists. But those who do know it exists also know that every year at the National Buffalo Wing Festival, every Labor Day weekend, we open the festival with inductions into the Buffalo Wing Hall of Flame, and we celebrate somebody who has helped to move chicken wings from the trash can to the center of the plate over the last 50 years. And so it was another incredible time. You talk about weather that was perfect. We had a perfect weekend. We had people there from over 62 countries, all 50 states, and for the first time we actually scored somebody from Antarctica that attended the festival. It was just an incredible event. So I'm going to give you just a quick, before we get into the front of the house, a quick riddle. What do the numbers 5.88 and 188 have in common?
Well, I would probably say 5 feet, 8.8 inches might be my height, but I know 188 is definitely not my weight, so I don't know.
So 5.88 and 188 have one thing in common, and that is Joey Jaws Chestnut, the United States heavyweight Major League Eating champion, beat his own title this weekend in Buffalo, and in the United States Competitive Wing Eating Championships, knocked back 5.88 pounds of buffalo wings in 12 minutes, which is the equivalent of 188 wings. I don't know how, those of you who didn't see it, count your blessings. It's not the prettiest thing to view, but man, he's an amazing athlete, and that is an athletic event. Go figure.
Unbelievable. So I have one question to that. Do they have a choice of the type of sauce that's on these wings?
No. No, it's going to be traditional medium sauce, and they all get the same product, and they all get the same sauce, so it's a level playing field. And their trays are actually weighed. So trays that are put in front of them are weighed before they're served, and then they're weighed again when they're done. And then they estimate the number of wings based on the average size of the wing to, you know, the poundage equals X number of pieces.
That's pretty crazy, amazing. But glad you had a great event this year. What else do we have?
What an appropriate year, too, to have inducted somebody who's not just a big kingpin in the wing business, but we inducted Big Joe Todaro into the Hall of Flame, and he is the CEO of one of the largest pizza organizations in the country, which is La Nova Pizzeria and the Lenovo Wing Company. And so it's just a... It was a great time. Great time all the way around, and we could spend the whole hour on that, but I dare not do it. So why don't I move to the front of the house and and remind everyone that it's getting very close, but it's still not too late. So I don't know when you hear this, if you're downloading this from iTunes, and it might be the 12th or the 13th of September. By the time you hear this, it is too late. But for those of you listening sooner than that, you can still get in on the Franchise Action Network annual meeting in Washington, D.C. next week with the IFA. It's not too late to sign up for FAN. And there are a tremendous array of programs available for your franchisees, as you should be bringing them with you. And also, not too late to sign up for the Franchising Gives Back Award Dinner. All the festivities starting next week in Washington, D.C. at the JW Marriott, September 12th, 13th, and 14th. So please, 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 if you've not yet made arrangements, get yourself in front of the computer and get her done. Also, Paul wanted to make note of something that caught my eye this week, which I thought was interesting. Applebee's making its way to Hawaii and debuting this month in Hawaii. And I'm, you know, not to bash, we're all here about franchising, but I'm going to scratch my head and say, if I'm in Hawaii, is Applebee's where I'm going? I don't think so, but I'll bet you that the locals are all just going to be jumping up and down that a brand like Applebee's is finding its way to the islands. They're going to be opening on September 12th. Their first restaurant will be in Oahu, West Oahu, and they're looking to add more and to spread out across the islands. So kudos to Dine Equity and to Applebee's for making their way to the great state of Hawaii. I wanted to also, Paul, make sure that we recognize this week's Franchisee Veteran of the Week, Mike Engel. Mike is a veteran of the Marine Corps, U.S. Marine Corps, for 4.5 years, and as we hear from so many prior servicemen who say that their experience in the service has given them all the skills and all the training that they need to become successful franchise owners. We're celebrating with VetFran its 25th anniversary by highlighting and spotlighting a veteran franchisee of the week each week. And this week we call out Mike Engel of Window Genie in Mooresville, Indiana. My salute to you, Mike, and thanks for your service to our country. Paul, the last thing I think I'll bring to our attention today is I've got to make my mind up on this one. You know what, Paul? I'm going to let it sit there because I can't make my mind up on either, and we've eaten up enough time talking chicken wings, and I don't want to take a moment's time away from our great guest today. So I'm going to stand back, close the front of the house, and let you take the introductions from there.
Sounds great. I want to tell everybody first that tomorrow at 8 a.m. Central Time is a special edition of Franchise Today. Our guest is Aziz Hashim, chairman of the International Franchise Association, and we'll be discussing with Aziz how he views leaders in franchising as ambassadors for the business model as well as their own brands. We have to explain that most franchisees are local, family-owned businesses owned and operated by individuals who choose a less risky path into entrepreneurship. We'll also be talking about some of the challenges facing franchising and, of course, next week's Summit and Franchise Action Network annual meeting in Washington, D.C. That's tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Central Time. You'll be able to download it after the show on iTunes, and, of course, you'll be able to listen to it live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. And the title for tomorrow's show, very appropriately, is Promoting and Protecting Franchising. And we'll be promoting that throughout social media, and there'll be plenty of replays through the weekend leading into next week's event. I read an interesting quote from today's guest, Mary Jane Riva, the president and CEO of Pizza Factory. People are moving fast, but the bottom line is they want to be able to sit down with their family and let their hair down and let their kids go. I believe community is all about that. And if you're going to go into a community, you should be part of it. Mary Jane, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, I just love that statement, and we're going to talk some as the show progresses about the focus on community. And today's topic, of course, is building a pizza brand with focus on community, something definitely very dear to my heart. So I'm really interested in learning more about you. But, you know, before we get to that, you know, we always like to talk about the person. Let's talk a little bit about you, where you started out, how you wound up in the C-level franchisor seat after being a franchisee for many years. And if you would even take us, you know, to the point of before becoming a franchisee, why you went in that direction. And I'm sure this is going to be quite interesting to a lot of individuals that are out there thinking about, you know, maybe a similar path.
Well, back in way back, when I was coming out of high school, I actually had the opportunity. Someone gave me a chance and let me become my first self-employed business, and I had a donut shop. And someone gave me that chance and that opportunity, and so from there, I turned that after about 3 years, decided I'd try to go back into the sector of working for someone else, saw that wasn't going to work for me, and ended up going, because my family was involved in Pizza Factory, I ended up going, my husband and I, we opened up our first store in Marietta in 1990 in California, and at that time, we were the only one in what was considered to be a big town for the brand, which was only about 25,000 people, but for them, that was a huge size of a town to go in, so we started with that, and from there on, we opened up 5 more stores with a partner in the Temecula Valley area, Southern California, and pretty much just kept working away and getting myself as much knowledge as I could about the pizza industry.
Before you go too much further into the pizza side of life, when you owned that donut shop, was it was it an independently owned, like Mary Jane's Donuts, or was it a franchised concept as well? I'm interested in how franchising and you got together.
Yeah, actually, it was not a franchise. It was an independent, and it was called MJ's Donuts, MJ for Mary Jane. And it was in Southern California, and it was a very, very tough business, being that you have to get up at midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning. So that really took me about 3 years to figure out that those weren't the kind of hours that I wanted to keep. So that's where, again, I decided to go ahead and sell that, and my family was in Pizza Factory, and so I knew of the brand and wanted to get involved, and we knew there was a community growing and upcoming in the Southern California area, and we wanted to take the brand and take the culture to that town because we knew it would be a good fit.
And so when you began with a multi-store agreement, or you began first as a single-unit operator, or help
us? No, there wasn't multi-unit agreements with Pizza Factory, and there still aren't today right now. Basically, we started out with the one store, and then just one by one we would add on to our portfolio of stores in this community, and we kind of laid out a little diagram of a map, so to speak, to make sure that we covered the areas of the community, and we just every 2-3 years we would open up another store. So it really wasn't it wasn't any kind of a master plan franchise agreement or anything like that.
So you didn't grow up in a franchise family. Actually, your family sounds like had its roots more in food and in pizza. Tell us about that growth experience and for your family to, you know, there's probably no better validation to somebody who's going to jump into a business that it's a good business to be in than those who are already there, and even more so if those that are there are family. So tell us a little bit about this wonderful brand and how this brand gains traction with its marketplace, its consumers, and who is the marketplace? What is the demographic, because from what I've read about your company, that demographic's changing a little bit.
A little bit. It's, and I'll go into that a little bit more detail, but you're right. The original founders, their concept was to go into small towns, 10,000 people or less, really small towns, places where the bigger brands would probably not go to because it didn't fit their demographics. And we never looked at demographics on a piece of paper. We would go into boots on the ground, go into a town. Does the community need our kind of brand there? Because when we go into community, we just don't set up and open the doors and sell pizza. We get involved in the community. And so having said that, for us to come down here and open these stores, we branded the whole area with our culture, which is what our goal is. But as many small towns as we're in, there's also those little pocket communities in the bigger towns. Say, for instance, down here in I'm in the Temecula Valley. You know, we have towns of 125,000 people here, but there's these little pocket of communities. And that's where people want. They want their own little place that they can call their own, that they can go to. And so we really cater to families. We really cater to the community. And that's always been from the founders and continuing on. That has not changed, nor will that.
So is it mostly eat-in, dine-in, or is it a combination of dine-in, carry-out, take-out? Is catering a big part of your business? I'm just trying to understand where the consumer that finds loyalty with your brand finds their point of entry, and then how you take them from what might have just been, oh gosh, just another pizza experience, to a wow experience that keeps them loyal and coming back.
Well, the product, first of all, is one of the wow factors, but the other would be is that, yeah, when we come into the community, the families are coming in here because of the product, but also because our owners are really vested. Our owners are operators also, and when we come in, we do everything from getting involved in the little leagues. The schools are a really big part of us. Delivery, takeout. We have arcades in most of our stores. Catering, we do catering also. We do a lot of really, really focus on the community. And I'll give you an example. With the school systems now, with the funding and the lack of it, we've really taken on doing banquets for the schools. They can't afford to take the kids out anymore. They can't afford to have nice banquets. So what we do is we give them a really, really, really good deal, and we bring it to their school and try to create an atmosphere for them to have a great function at their school. So we really get involved in every level. It is a dine-in. It is take-out. We do deliver. We do all those things. But ultimately, what we're known for when we go into a town is they know that when they come to our door and say, can you help us? We may not always give them what they came in for if they're asking for $1,000, but we're going to give them something. We're going to do something to help this community, and we're going to do something to help the people that are a part of it, because our success is because of the community. And we feel very strongly that in order for us to survive and succeed in a community, we've got to give back. That's part of what community is all about. And that's really what our culture is really getting involved in the community, really getting to know our customers. When customers come into our stores, our owners know their names. They know their kids. Their kids work for us. You know, it's very, very community-centric.
That's awesome. And I love how you brought culture into the equation, because certainly culture has got to be a big part of it, especially in a franchise where, you know, everybody's kind of vested into it. But I wanted to give just some interesting facts on pizza, so our listening audience really understands the breadth of the pizza industry, so to speak. Americans share a love affair for pizza, consuming a shocking 350 slices every second. But if you want to see a slice of the future, watch how millennials are now pulling a piece from the pie. They're responsible for an increasing share of U.S. pizza sales market, expected to reach nearly $45 billion this year, up from $38.5 billion in 2015. And, of course, that's according to the Pizza Industry Analysis in 2016. And far from being a typical go-to food accompanied by a round of beer on a night out with the guys, pizza now is largely being consumed by millennial females, as much as 63%, according to PMQ Pizza Magazine. And I mean, that's Mary Jane, those are some astounding and astonishing, you know, figures. And I'm sure you're focusing on that because, you know, what you had just said about, you know, millennials and the changing marketplace. I mean, it's now getting to the point where they're really outspending the baby boomers.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that even in small town USA, where maybe there might not be as many millennials?
You know, we're finding it in a lot of different areas, not only as a consumer base, but also as our new franchisees. But you're right, the millennials are coming up, and they have this whole different culture they're kind of looking for, but ultimately they're still, as much as people are going with their phones in front of their face, their computers, their go, ultimately everybody still wants a place where they're going to interact with people. And when they go to a place, they're going to feel like they're part of something. And it kind of reminds me of the old Cheers, you know, everybody knows your name. People like to come in, they want to take their little league teams, they want to go in there and see their neighbors. They still want that interaction because they get so much lack of interaction with any other people that it's just a breath of fresh air. And we find that people are coming in here and they're staying there having their parties. People are not turning off to that as fast as they're going, and as much as the culture for millennials seems to be that they're out there moving fast and everything's computerized, they really are looking for a place when they have their kids, someplace they're going to be able to make memories, and someplace they're going to be able to create a family tradition to where they come and have their birthday parties, and that's what we're known for. If you go on our Facebook, if you go and talk to a lot of our fans, you hear that over and over again. Oh, I grew up in a town that had a pizza factory, and they talk about all their memories. And you don't hear that a whole lot when you talk to a lot of people about different brands. They don't talk about what their memory is growing up. And that's what they talk about when they talk about Pizza Factory. We're embedded in the community, and we are making a huge, important part of families in these communities to where they can and have a good time and let their kids create memories as a family.
You know, Stan, I can't think of better communal fare than pizza. Just putting, you know, several pies out on the table, everybody grabbing a slice. I mean, to me, that's what I grew up in. You know, certainly you two, Stan, both of us being brought up in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, yeah. But 350 slices a second, Joey Chestnut couldn't even touch that.
No, I couldn't.
I want to ask Mary Jane, though, actually, one question, but you've just elicited a memory for me, too, in the talk about family and memories, because I spent a little time in the ice cream world and franchising, and that was always the big emotional play was, you know, families go out for ice cream, and there are memories of being a kid and with your grandpa and with your parents. Mm-hmm. And having grown up in Brooklyn, as Paul points out, you know, pizza was definitely as much a part of my memories of good times with the family going out for pizza night. And I don't think enough people really, without some stimulation, give that as much thought consciously. But the minute you mentioned it, it just triggered a wide open memory. And with all the talk about culture and family, I know, Paul, we talked about this a little prior to the show today. We want to make certain that we weave into the discussion something about your no bully zone and how important that's become in explaining to the audience how that lives and works within your brand.
Yeah, that's a real, very dear to my heart program that we implemented when we purchased the company back in 2012. And it's another part of community. We're employing high school kids. We're employing the kids of the families that come in here. And with some of my first stores, it always broke my heart. Kids would come and apply for a job. They'd get the job. If they weren't part of the clique or the group at school, you know, you could see it even in the workplace. They were a little bit left out. Nobody would kind of go up to that person, and that drives me nuts because I just don't like anybody to come. You're so scared. It's your first job. You're 16. You've never worked anywhere before, and you're not being embraced. And maybe you're different. Maybe you're in the key club instead of the football team, whatever it is. But everybody should be embraced. And when someone comes to a workplace, these kids are coming here, and I want them to feel welcomed. And if we're going to do it in our business, we've got to take it out to the community. And again, it comes back to the school systems and the lack of funding. So what we've done is implemented a program that is free to the schools, and we've put together different ways for them to implement it in their classrooms. We have an anti-bully bench, which is really cool. It's a great thing to have at a school, and basically we put a bench at a school, and it's where kids can go when they're feeling like they're left out or they're being bullied or maybe they're a new kid, whatever it is. They go and sit on that bench, and then other kids will know, okay, there's somebody here that's not feeling it. And so they go and they make friends with this child or teenager sometimes. We have them at high schools too. And then we just take the programs to the schools and we give the teachers, we give the PTA, we give them all everything that they could possibly need. And then we have an award system, Act of Kindness Award. We have, you know, they'll get a free pizza or whatever if they've shown an act of kindness. Each store does something different. But we really try to get into the schools and try to help the schools mitigate some of the problems that are out there. The statistics are terrible. They're terrible in the workplace, too. You know, again, we have restaurants. We have adults working here, and we have kids working here, and we don't want the bully in here either. We don't want anybody to ever feel like they're out of place or they don't belong. And so that's basically what we've done is taken this program, if we're going to, we're part of the community. We are about family. And families, we even have another quick note on our bully program, our kids' menus. When you turn it over, there's questions and there's interaction with the parents. So a lot of times kids don't even communicate to their parents what's going on, that they're being bullied, or maybe they're the bully, and they're not communicating. So we've implemented on the back of our menus questions and interaction with the parents as the kids are coloring. So maybe they can get the kid to open up and say, you know what, and kind of get a conversation going so that they're not the last to know that their child is miserable at school or miserable at work, either one. So we really want the communication, and so we've provided this free program to our schools. And we take it to anybody that asks for it, quite honestly, but the schools are the ones that seem to be receiving it the most because of, obviously, the kids at the school.
You know, I love the whole community aspect of this. I love that it's a family experience. I even refer to it as relationship dining. I mean, back when I first, you know, or early years living in Texas and being homesick for, you know, family in New York, I had started a blog. I think it's even still out there someplace. And it was Texas Italian Restaurant Review. But it was all about the dining experience, not about, you know, critiquing the food or anything like that. And this is the same thing. I mean, it's embracing, you know, experience, relationships. It's a throwback to getting families to sit around the table, you know, obviously, you know, family style, where everybody reaching for the pizza and having a good time. But as you said, also, you know, communicating, I think that's just a tremendous, you know, point that you bring out, and definitely a cornerstone of the culture at Pizza Factory. So one thing that really intrigued me, reading some of the press releases from our good friends at All Points Public Relations. In one of them, it said, it's not rooftops we're looking for. We're looking for schools. We're looking for parks. We want to see community, and that's why we go into towns where others might not. Some of these small towns are our most successful stores. And yet you hear all the time when you're talking with the big brands that, you know, we need to know how many rooftops, we need to know how many, you know, people are in this area, without any really notion or even a hint at, you know, the family and the community. And I see that as definitely being a cornerstone to your brand success as well.
Yeah, in fact, our number one store is in a town of less than 13,000. And,
wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. But you're right. When we get a prospect, or when we're looking to expand our brand, we're looking at the community as a whole. We're not looking at it on a piece of paper and say, okay, there's this many people and there's that. Because inside the city limits is your one number. But then you got to take outside of those city limits. How many people are you going to draw from outside those city limits, especially when you're in a small town? Small towns, there's a whole bunch of people out there that aren't, you know, actually counted in that city demographics. But what we're looking for is, we're looking for the schools, we're looking for the parks, we're looking for the community that is what we do best. We don't want to go in there, again, like I said previously, we don't go in there just to set up shop and say, okay, we're selling pizzas. We're going in there to be a part of that whole community. That's what our culture is, that's what we do best. And that's what we've been known for. And we're going to continue to do that, because there's lots of communities out there that need a place, just like you were saying. Where do you see, how many families do you think sit at a table anymore with everybody together and eat and talk? They don't. When they go out for pizza, that's where they do it. So we're looking for the communities that need our culture, and that we're going to be able to help that community with what we have to offer.
We're going to come back on the other half of our hour together and talk more about the franchise opportunity. But first, this is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto, and we're speaking today with longtime franchisee turned president, CEO, and franchisor, Mary Jane Riva, at Southern California's Pizza Factory. Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. Does your CRM do everything you need it to do? to manage communications and relationships with your prospective and existing franchisees? Does it track all emails sent and received by the home office teams to prospective and existing franchisees? Does it track text messages as well? Well, it does when you use FRM. Are you benefiting from the latest version of your CRM software, or are you still waiting in queue for expensive upgrades to a long overdue system? Maybe it's time to call FRM Solutions. With FRM, your system gets updated each year, and those updates are absolutely free, so you're always operating in the latest, greatest version of the platform. And access to FRM couldn't be made any easier from the cloud or from directly within your Outlook inbox. Struggle no more. Get down to earth with practical solutions that require no long-term contracts, no long waits for expensive upgrades, and oh, did I mention that you can even track text messages to and from your prospective and existing franchisees, not just emails. FRM provides everything you want and need and more from CRM and document management tools. No excuses, just solutions. Take a demo and see for yourself on the web at frmsolutions.com. Franchise Today also brought to you by the Franchise Foundry. With more than 30 years' experience bringing emerging brands to market with the kind of growth that comes from experience, healthy, sustainable growth, the Franchise Foundry provides their clients with both coaching and consulting. It's a hybrid approach, which fosters more effective solutions for both their clients as well as their franchisees. The team at the Franchise Foundry is rich in practical hands-on experience and expertise in general business management, operational and change management, and they're skilled as well and proficient in digital marketing, franchise recruitment, and development. Let them assist you with your creation of a roadmap for potential mergers and acquisitions, and as well with the all-important guidance needed to navigate those courses, should that be of interest to you. Learn more about Paul Segreto and the Franchise Foundry, along with their expanding list of clients, at www.franchisefoundry.com. That's Paul Segreto and the Franchise Foundry at franchisefoundry.com. We love the pizza factory business and the direction that has been chosen for the franchise, where business-making people smile and love making our store and staff awesome. A quote from a gentleman named Jeff Chu, multi-unit franchisee, on the franchise development website for Pizza Factory. So let's talk a little bit about the business model and learn a little bit more about the people who are delivering those rich cultural and family memory experiences that you're so proud of, Mary Jane. What is the profile, if you were to rub the genie out of the lamp and say, here's who I think is our perfect franchisee, who would it be, and how do you know that?
Our perfect franchisee is someone that, and perfection is something you'll never attain, of course, but what we were really looking for is someone who's going to be able to go into their community and actually interact with them. We don't want them behind the counter the whole time. We want them out at their schools. We want them to embrace our brand and our culture for what it is and take it and run with it. And we want them to make their store their own little community store. We're not cookie-cutter stores, so when you go into a Pizza Factory, everyone, although there'll be the branding elements, but everyone's going to show a little bit of their community in there. And so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for people that are really wanting to have their own business, but yet still feel like they're making a difference in their community. And they've got to be able to communicate well and really stand behind the brand and the product, of course, because the product is awesome. And so that's pretty much what we're looking for, those kind of people that really are looking for being their own business owner in a great community.
So how do you go about finding these people, and more importantly, how do they find you? How do you measure these? You know, so many times when I was still a franchisor, I would hear from prospective franchisees who may have gotten really deeply engaged in the love of the brand that we represented, and the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain weren't necessarily in synchronous harmony. So the emotional piece, again, in a business like yours is going to register really high. Oh, I love that business. Oh, I'd love to be in that business. But sitting down at the table and enjoying pizza with your family is not the same as being in front of the oven and baking it. So how do you help separate the wheat from the chaff and balance the experience and help your prospective franchisees learn what a day in the life is really like being in the pizza business as opposed to being just the consumer.
Well, it's an interesting is 93% of our franchisees currently are either family members, ex-employees, or customers. That's how our brand has grown. So it's pretty interesting to see that the brand is strong enough to where there's that many people that have been touched by the brand and want to be a part of it. And finding out when you're right, there's always you wish you had that genie in that bottle that you could take a prospect and look at them and say, okay, they're going to be this and they're going to be that. And that's really difficult to do. What we try to do is we spend a lot of time with them and going to stores, looking at it, letting them see what the operation of the store is for a day, and going over the processes, the training, trying to give them everything possible to let them know, you're right, not sitting at a table eating pizza is not what your life is going to be. Your life changes once you become a business owner, and it changes drastically. So we try to embrace the fact that they have family, and that's part of the culture, is to use their family or involve their family in it so that they're not at a business or a job that their family can't be a part of also, because that's important to us that families are involved in the whole process. It's hard when you've got one person working, whether it's a traditional job or a business, and the family is not part of that, whether it's time-wise or understanding the business. So we do our best to make sure the whole family is going to understand what they're getting into and what role and parts they can play.
So is that what is really sets the stage for, you know, multi-unit opportunities, the fact that families involved, because obviously it would be difficult if it was just one person to be mm-hmm. so involved in multiple communities. So does family play a big part into multi-unit development?
It does. We have, not necessarily the case every time, but we have 13 mm-hmm. of our franchisees are multi-unit operators. And majority of them are, they have a brother, they have an uncle, they have somebody that they're helping them do this. A lot of them use their managers and move them up the ladder, which is what we try to do. We, meaning my husband and I, we try to lift our managers up in our stores to become better, and then a lot of them become owners from there. So a lot of that happens within the brand. A lot of owners will take their management team and use them to help grow their brand and their portfolio with Pizza Factory.
So I read this morning online in one of the publications, it might have been Restaurant Business or Restaurant News, talking about, you know, the fast casual industry, segment of the industry being somewhat stagnant over the last 6 months. And yet you're basically in that fast casual segment yourself, and yet you're still growing in leaps and bounds. What do you attribute that to?
Oh, there's multiple things. Obviously, the franchisees embracing the technology and the marketing that we're bringing to them now. But we also, our brand, even through the economy, we've been around for 30 years. We're still here. And our culture is something that resonates with the communities, and they're still going to come here. We're not fast casual in the sense of the Pieologies and those where you go through the line and you
sure.
pick your food.
Yeah.
We're not that kind of a fast casual. But, we're seeing great numbers. We're really happy with where the company's still going. We're happy with where the individual Z's are going and their profits. Everything is moving up, and we're really proud of that. Now, you were mentioning Restaurant News. We were voted number 15 out of 20 brands to watch for 2016 in our segment, which is very flattering considering we're a 30-year-old brand and everybody else that was in that segment were the Pieologies and all these other different brands of the up-and-coming new brands. So people are still, and millennials, talking back when you were speaking of them earlier, they're looking for something to invest in and something that they can get into. Millennials really want to be able to give back. They want something that means more than just money and their retirement. They're looking at what can they do right now? How can they make a difference? So we're seeing a lot of younger people, a lot of millennials coming up into the ranks looking at our brand because of what we are, because of our culture.
So one thing I don't think we had clarified you were just bringing it up about biology and people walking through the line. Is the service at your restaurants table service?
No, what you do in our restaurants is we have party rooms, arcades, and the guests will come in, they'll order at the counter, and they go sit down, and then we take the food out to them. So it's not table service where you have a waiter or waitress waiting on you, no. And the kids are, you know, there's games for them to play while the parents are being able to communicate to each other for a while, alone actually, without having anything. They can let their kids go play some games, and they can actually sit there and chat for a while. But, yeah, we're basically, and we make all our stuff on site. We're not, we don't bring anything in frozen, or every store makes their product right where they are. The meatballs, the meat sauce, the dough, everything is made on site.
Getting hungry.
I've already had my obligatory Jimmy John's today, but my appetite can grow here very quickly as well, Paul. Hey, Mary Jane, I'm curious as to how somebody, I mean, you're somebody very unique in our world, to have been a franchisee. We see franchisees become franchisors, but seldom do we see them becoming franchisors of the same brand. So you had like 20-plus years as a Pizza Factory franchisee before becoming president, CEO, and franchisor. I've got to believe that along the way, some of what you learned as a franchisee that you now administer back to your network is benefiting from the fact that you've got duality of vision. Talk a little bit about how that happened for you and what that experience as a franchisee has taught you in terms of how to be a responsible, respected franchisor and have common and shared interests with your franchise population.
Yeah, I was a franchisee for 22 years before
wow.
The opportunity came across to purchase a company. And I'm still a franchisee. We still own stores. That won't change. I always want to make sure that there's a foothold and a feeling still of what the franchisees are going through. What I have and bring to the company now is a real heart, not that the previous owners, I don't want to misunderstand that, but I have a real heart for the franchisees. I am not looking at this to grow just for the sake of growing. I am in it with them still. I have a couple stores right now. One of them's really good. One of them's not so much. So I'm sharing the same struggles as they do, but I really want to take what things I've learned as being a franchisee and a different type of a community, not necessarily the smaller towns that we've been in, and bring some of the technology and stuff that you see out there and bring it to these smaller towns, and bring some of the advertising and the marketing tools that we found that worked really well for us in Southern California, and bring it to the other stores. And I our franchisees are great. They're hardworking. I know how hard they work because I've done it. I still will get out, and if I can get out, and if my staff will allow me, which most of them don't want me to anymore, but I love to get behind the counter. I love to make pizza still. It's in my blood. I will like the customers. I want to wait on because I love getting in a store. I love to go to new store openings. And, again, most of the time they kind of push me to the side, but you know, I still enjoy it. I enjoy every aspect of it. But I also understand, you know, in 1990, it was right before one of the recessions that we had. We opened up a store and we started gangbusters, and then all of a sudden, boom, down we went. And I can remember losing sleep all night, crying. What am I going to do? How am I going to do this? And why did I do this? Why did I ever think I could do this? And coming out of that, so it's very embedded in me still, those feelings. And I get those feelings for the franchisees and what they need and what they're looking for. And sometimes it's just someone to listen to and someone to verify that their feelings really are legit, what they're feeling is okay to feel.
So can you actually twirl a pizza if you have to?
You bet I can.
Oh, I wish we were on.
Oh yeah,
here.
You bet I can. Boy, I'll take on any kid in this restaurant right now.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah,
what a great talent. I mean, I remember growing up you know, walking by the little pizzerias in Brooklyn, New York, and seeing the guy in the window just flipping mm-hmm. the pizza and stuff. I mean, it's a great draw, but it's also, you know, to me, you know, commitment to the trade. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, when I look at some of the fast food type pizza places that are predominantly delivery and stuff, and they're a machine and stuff, there's no personality to it. So I really love that. We definitely have to come see you do that one day, that's for sure.
There you go. Yeah, we actually, the footprint of our stores are even set up to where our kitchens are open, so that everybody can see us making the pizzas. They can see the tossing going on. We want the community to see what we're doing. And you know, we do tours, and the kids come back there, and they love to get little pizzas and toss them. So it's fun.
So we're sitting at 113 locations currently and spread out in 6 western states. Tell us a little bit about your plans for the coming years. What's on tap for store openings for the balance of this year, and what are you looking ahead to in the next 1 to 5?
Right now, we spent the first 4 years when we purchased the company really rebranding and bringing up technology. Now I'm on the focus of growth. I feel that the structure and everything, the programs that we've implemented into the company now, I feel like I'm more comfortable working really strong on growth. Right now we're getting ready on the 12th of this month. We're opening up a store in Merced, California. We have another one opening in Happy Valley, Oregon, and we've got a couple locations that are just about ready to start construction. But the growth process for me is going to be going more full-blown now. Small town's still the priority. Again, we don't go into anything with numbers. We go into it by community, and we look to see where we feel it's a good fit for us. And moving out from the 6 states, I really want to focus on the 6 states still, because cost, economics, everything about it is better to get really strength around, because small towns usually are really far apart. So the marketing gets a little bit tricky sometimes. You don't have that high density of stores where you can do co-op marketing as well. So we want to do some of that, but we still want to start moving out further, start moving our way to the east, and I'm doing everything and looking into everything possible to accomplish some growth going here. Right now, I've always settled at if we open 10 stores a year, I was fine for the last 4 years since we took over. Now I'm ready to boost that up and start going after a little bit faster growth.
Some of what I've read boasts that you guys really bolster your franchisees with incredible training, and I'm curious about what a franchisee's experience is from the training perspective, and then how much support do you give them during that grand opening? How long are you in the store with them?
When they come into our process, once they've signed and we're moving on, they start out with, we completely redid our training program, and now when they have a week in the kitchen, it's not in a restaurant, it's actually in a kitchen one-on-one with our food and beverage supervisor, and he works one-on-one with them to show them all our core products, because we do make everything on-site in these restaurants. We want to make sure that they really have that part down. So they spend a week there, and then they spend another 4 weeks in an actual training store. From there, once they've gone on, we've done marketing and operational training also, but when they actually open their store, we have a team of anywhere from 3 to 5 people for 2 weeks, and we keep them there to make sure that they're getting a really good start. And after that process, we have reps for every area, and they visit them. We have an in-house staff, great staff that stays on top of reaching out to them. Performance groups are in the office now to see what areas. We analyze the P&Ls and look to see, okay, you know, your food cost is too high, your labor's too high. So then we reach out to the franchisee and say, okay, how can we help? Let us show you some different ways. We've got a lot of different programs that we're still implementing to try to not just get their sales up, because it's not only about sales, it's about profit. You know, the franchisees can be making a lot of good money and bringing in some really great numbers, but how's it going down to their bottom line? Are they actually seeing the benefit of that? So we're really working on making sure that their numbers, after they're open, that they stay in line and that they're profiting, not just working really hard.
So how can interested parties find you at any upcoming events, whether it be franchise events or industry events, or if none of the events, you know, how can they find out more information about Pizza Factory?
Well, our website, whether you go to our consumer website, pizzafactory.com, and we also have our franchise site, which is pizzafactoryfranchises.com. As far as I'm always at the store openings. I'll be at Merced on the 12th and watching them open and being a part of that. And I, anytime there's an opening, you'll see me there. As far as other ways to get a hold of us, the corporate office, 1-800-654-4840. I always welcome calls to talk about the brand. I'm very proud of it. We've got a lot of good things happening, and I'm always available to chat with anybody about how they can get involved and what are the some of the process that they might have questions about. I'm very accessible.
That's great. I imagine you are. Mary Jane, I really appreciate you being our guest today. I know you have a busy schedule, so we really appreciate the time you took out today to speak with us. And, of course, this segment of Franchise Today, like all segments of Franchise Today, will be available after the show on iTunes as well as on blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Feel free to share it throughout social media. We really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Dan, another show. I'm definitely hungry now. Without a doubt, I could go for a couple of slices of pizza. And probably shouldn't eat it, but I think I'll do so anyway.
Well, I'm just going to have to restrain myself and get back into some normal habits after Buffalo. And Jimmy John's is going to have to suffice until dinner time tonight on this end, Paul. Hey, you know, I kind of toyed back and forth at the beginning of the program with one more item in the front of the house, and I let it go. But after one of the last things that Mary Jane shared with us, I feel drawn and compelled to bring it back around. So I was going to talk about becoming a profit master with ICFE special sessions that are going to be offered in Vegas this year, not to miss the opportunity to attend parts one and two of the Steve LaFever and Rod Bristol show, better known as Profit Mastery, and earning your CFE credits with something that isn't just obligatory to do to get the points, but that will really make a difference in the lives of unit operators when they learn how to manage their books. Something she said, though, really brings to mind something that is, I think, probably little thought about by most franchisors. When it comes to programs like Profit Mastery, we think about helping struggling franchisees or helping those who aren't doing as well do better by getting more in touch with their accounting. But think about it from a development perspective, and as Mary Jane just talked about, with franchisees coming in the door, not just top line, but growing, helping them understand how to manage their bottom lines. If more franchisors were focused on those initiatives coming in and teaching programs like Profit Mastery from day one, unit level economics would go out of the gate at a higher watermark. Item 19s would look spectacular. And I just wonder how many franchise organizations actually think of programs like Franchise Mastery as keys to better franchise sales, not just helping with existing operations. It's just a random thought that occurred to me as she was finishing out the last segment, Paul.
Yeah, I also think it allows the franchisor, if that is their focus, you know, to understand for themselves the critical KPIs. And as they see those moving in the wrong direction, can probably jump in a more timely fashion and help get it back on track. Because I've seen that over the years, especially in a lot of service-related businesses, where, you know, by the time the typical franchisor gets on board to something's going wrong, boy, that franchisee is in a deep hole at that point. And if you just start to see those critical KPIs, you know, even moving, you know, tenths of a point, and you keep seeing a trend over a short period of time, certainly it's much, much better to address it at that point. And usually you can save it and turn it around. So absolutely spot on, Stan. I wish more and more franchisors would focus on the bottom line from day one, and it would help franchise sales, without a doubt.
Well, I guess that wraps it for another week, doesn't it, Paul?
That is a wrap. And remember, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Central Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show, we'll be interviewing in a special edition of Franchise Today, Aziz Hashim, chairman of the International Franchise Association. We'll be talking about everything from issues and challenges facing franchising all the way to next week's upcoming events in Washington, D.C. But I believe you'll find a very interesting perspective as Aziz will share some of his background, early stage background, which we've been privileged to hear and Stan. And it's really just a fascinating story from a very, very truly genuine and humble individual that is just the perfect ambassador for franchising.
Couldn't say that better, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Aziz, seeing you, and seeing everyone that's going to be in D.C. next week at Fly-In. And again, it's not too late if you've not yet registered to get online right now and get yourself and some of your franchisees out there for this all-important event.
Absolutely. So until our next show, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great thing called franchising. Franchise Today is out.